Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Thanks very much for your financial support of WBAI and In Other News. It's very much appreciated. We covered some ground in past shows on the topic of nonviolent protest, such as BDS and living simply by opting out of various systems as a form of activism. And a few shows ago, we were talking about weather control, carbon credit tax scams, Agenda 21, smart growth, surveillance, etc. And a caller said that all of this is under the umbrella of consumerism and the disposable society. Nothing is really made to last for decades, hidden within electronics, cars, trucks, appliances, go down the list, is a built-in obsolescence. Now, imagine a form of activism to at least make a dent in this runaway disposable society, which would be a form of boycott, divest, sanction, or the BDS movement. And I mentioned this in a past show. It's a Palestinian-led movement for freedom, justice, and equality, inspired by the South African anti-apartheid movement. And the BDS call urges action to pressure Israel to comply with international law. And the boycotts involve withdrawing support, this one specifically for Israel and Israeli and international companies that are involved in the violation of Palestinian human rights, as well as complicit Israeli sporting, cultural, and academic institutions. Divestment, the campaigns urge banks, local councils, churches, pension funds, and universities to withdraw investments from all Israeli companies and from international companies involved in violating Palestinian rights. In the sanctions part, those are campaigns that pressure governments to fulfill their legal obligation to hold Israel to account, including by ending military trade, free trade agreements, and expelling Israel from international forums such as the UN and the FIFA. And this is a powerful, nonviolent form of activism that has a history of success. And we took calls from you a few shows ago to talk about this in terms of what could that look like if you use this template to apply a more sweeping movement of BDS within social media that could reshape our world in a way to make things less disposable, more durable, and using the BDS template. We do know that the BDS movement has been very effective to the point where 9 states have issued legislation requiring the state to create a blacklist of institutions and companies that engage in or promote boycott, divest, sanction activities against Israel. Now, I'm talking about this in the context of what's really coming our way in the next 4 years. There's an interesting book published by the J.B. Lippincott Company in 1934. It was published, titled The Power of Nonviolence by Richard Gregg. And the chapters include Modern Examples of Nonviolent Resistance. Another chapter is titled Moral Jiu-Jitsu. Another one, Utilizing Emotional Energy. Another chapter, How is Mass Nonviolence Possible? Well, in the chapter titled Modern Examples of Nonviolent Resistance, some interesting cases here. They include what occurred in Hungary during the mid-19th century. The Emperor Franz Joseph was trying to subordinate Hungary to the Austrian power. Contrary to the terms of the old Treaty of Union of those two countries, the Hungarian moderates felt helpless as they were too weak to fight. But Francis Deak, a Catholic landowner of Hungary, protested to them, quote, "Your laws are violated, yet your mouths remain closed. Woe to the nation which raises no protest when its rights are outraged. It contributes to its own slavery by its silence. The nation which submits to injustice and oppression without protest is doomed." Diek proceeded to organize a scheme for independent Hungarian education, agriculture, and industry. A refusal to recognize the Austrian government in any way, and a boycott against Austrian goods. He admonished the people not to be betrayed into acts of violence, nor to abandon the ground of legality. "This is the safe ground," he said, "on which, unarmed ourselves, we can hold our own against armed force. If suffering must be necessary, suffer with dignity." This advice was obeyed throughout Hungary. When the Austrian tax collector came, the people did not beat him or even hoot him. They merely declined to pay. The Austrian police then seized their goods, but no Hungarian auctioneer would sell them. When an Austrian auctioneer was brought, he found that he would have to bring bidders from Austria to buy the goods. The government soon discovered that it was costing more to distrain the property than the tax was worth. The Austrians attempted to billet their soldiers upon the Hungarians. The Hungarians did not actively resist the order, but the Austrian soldiers, after trying to live in houses where everyone despised them, protested strongly against it. The Austrian government declared the boycott of Austrian goods illegal, but the Hungarians defied the decree. The jails were filled to overflowing. No representatives from Hungary would cite in the imperial parliament. The Austrians then tried conciliation, the prisoners released and partial self-government given, but Hungary instead upon its full claims. Okay, in reply, Emperor Franz Joseph decreed compulsory military service. The Hungarians answered that they would refuse to obey it. Finally, on February 18, 1867, the emperor capitulated and gave Hungary her constitution. The campaign seems to have been defective because of some violence of inner attitude on part of the Hungarians. But even so, it provided a remarkable example of the power of nonviolent resistance, even though the principle was imperfectly realized and applied. There are examples, other great examples in this chapter, including the 8-year standoff in South Africa beginning in 1906 involving Indian workers coming to Natal to work in the mines and elsewhere. Another example in India involved an instance of the successful use of organized mass nonviolent resistance located at Ahmedabad mill strike in 1917, and the struggles against the government of Kedah in 1916 and 1917 at Borsod. There are more, and they were supervised and conducted by Gandhi. The Kedah and Borsod struggles were in regard to taxation, and Nagpur struggle involved the right to parade with an Indian nationalist flag. The Jews have also been nonviolent for the last 1900 years. Now I'm reading passages from the book The Power of Nonviolence by Richard B. Gregg. It was published in 1934. There's a chapter labeled Moral Jiu-Jitsu. If one man attacks another with physical violence and the victim hits back, the violent response gives the attacker a certain reassurance and moral support. It shows that the victim's scale of moral values in regard to violence as a mode of settling questions is the same as that of the attacker. A mere display of either fear or anger by the victim is sufficient to have this effect. It makes the attacker sure of his own savoir-faire, of his choice of methods, of his knowledge of human nature, and hence of his opponent. The attacker's morale is sustained. His sense of values is vindicated. His confidence in his general method of dealing with his opponent is reassured. But suppose the assailant attacks with physical violence, a different sort of person. The attitude of this new opponent is fearless, calm, steady, and because of a different belief, training, or experience, he has much self-control. He does not respond to the attacker's violence with counter-violence. Instead, he accepts the blows with good-tempered reasoning, stating his belief as to the truth of the matter in the dispute, asking for an examination of both sides of the dispute, and stating his readiness to abide by the truth. He offered resistance, but only in moral terms. He states his readiness to prove his sincerity by his own suffering rather than imposing suffering on the assailant through violence. He accepts blow after blow, showing no signs of fear or shrinking or resentment, keeping steadily good-humored and kindly in look of eye, tone of voice, and posture of body and arms. The assailant's first thought may be that the opponent is afraid of him. He's a coward, ready to give way and acknowledge defeat. But the opponent's look and posture show not fear, but courage. His steady resistance of will reveals no subservience. His unflinching endurance of pain is startling. At such an unusual and unexpected experience, the assailant will be surprised. If at first he was inclined to be scornful or contemptuous of the victim as a coward, those feelings rapidly become displaced by curiosity and wonder. As the psychologist Shand points out, quote, wonder tends to exclude repugnance, disgust, and contempt in relation to its object. Thus, nonviolent resistance acts as a moral jujitsu. The nonviolence and goodwill of the victim act like the lack of physical opposition by the user of physical jujitsu to cause the attacker to lose his moral balance. He suddenly and unexpectedly posed the moral support which the usual violent resistance of most victims would render him. He plunges forward, as it were, into a new world of values. He feels insecure because of the novelty of the situation and his ignorance of how to handle it. He loses his poise, his self-confidence. The victim not only lets the attacker come out, as it were, but pulls him forward by kindness, generosity, and voluntary suffering so that the attacker quite loses his moral balance. The user of nonviolent resistance, knowing what he is doing and having a more creative purpose of his superior wisdom to subdue the rough direct force or physical strength of his opponent. Another way to state it is that between two persons in a physically violent combat, there may appear to be complete disagreement, but in reality, they conduct their fight on the basis of a strong fundamental agreement that violence is a sound mode procedure. Now, we're opening the phone lines for you to call in with a comment or question relating to this topic. And that number to call, by the way, is 347-335-0818. That's 347-335-0818. Maybe you can think of current examples of how this approach may integrate with some forms of activism on some of today's issues, or how it might be revealing when violence in protests dominate. Have you noticed when this happens? It's usually a core group. They're very insular, externally funded. You hear about the event when it's over, and the people involved are not usually connected to real activist groups. The Comet Ping Pong shooter comes to mind. But to continue a little more with this chapter, Moral Jiu-Jitsu, from the book The Power of Nonviolence by Richard Gregg, just as in the case of wrestling jiu-jitsu, the violence helps to overthrow its user. The first is that prolonged anger is very exhausting. Did you hear that? The first is that prolonged anger is very exhausting. Remember that kinesthesiology test that we did a couple of weeks ago? You hold your hand out and you think these horrible thoughts about a person or thing. It weakens you. Many people know that, but it's just important to keep it in context. So Richard continues here. Undoubtedly, anger at first gives an access of muscular and sometimes mental energy, but it also consumes energy very rapidly, and if long sustained, it may completely exhaust the person feeling it. Secondly, part of the nervous system of the violent assailant is reverted and used up against himself. The steadfast appeals of an individual nonviolent resistor work in personality of violent attacker, arousing the latter's more decent and kindly motives and putting them in conflict with his fighting aggressive instincts. Thus, the attacker's personality is divided. Are you thinking, wait a minute, if someone hits me, I'm going to hit them back. I'm going to defend myself. I don't want to be a coward. I'm going to defend myself from physical harm. Right now, we have the luxury of suspending time and picking apart the principles within a physical conflict, and what are the long-term outcomes of nonviolent applications. If anyone feels inclined to doubt such a reaction of the outsiders against the assailant's violence, let him recall what happens in time of a labor strike if any striker loses his temper and destroys property or attacks any person. Immediately, the employers blazon the news in the press and try to make it appear that that all the strikers are men of violence and that public safety is threatened. They play upon the fears of the public and then persuade the mayor to call out extra police or soldiers. Violence opposed not by violence but courageous nonviolence, if it is in the open, is sure sooner or later to react against the attacker. The burden of justification rests heavily on the violent one, and the presumption is against him. He has still another element of superior power, his proved sincerity and conviction. Deep conviction is a great power. Some writer has said, quote, to be willing to suffer and die for a cause is an incontestable proof or sincere belief, and perhaps is most case the only incontestable proof. Respect for the personality of the opponent was one of the important elements in the practice of medieval European chivalry and added much to the charm and power of that code. Respect for personality is a prerequisite for real freedom and fine human association. It is proof of unselfishness and of moral poise and understanding. And I'm going through this, listeners, because this book, The Power of Nonviolence, touches upon a lot of the topics that are brought to the airwaves here on this radio station and a lot of what has happened at Standing Rock does intersect with the BDS movement and our discussions that we've had with what a larger movement would look like. There's a chapter in this book called Doubts and Queries. I'm sorry if I missed your call, by the way, that I was going through some of this material. The number to call if you want to call back, 347-335-0818. I'll put you on the air if you have a question or comment about this topic or some of the topics that we've talked about on the show and we'll continue to go over. So the chapter is titled Doubts and Queries in the Power of Nonviolence. Many of the commonly voiced doubts about the character of nonviolent resistors have already been answered either directly or by clear implication. Some other adverse criticisms deserve detailed examination. It is asserted that nonviolent resistance means peace at any price. This is not so. The nonviolent resistor does not confuse peace with absence of conflict. He recognized that there will always be conflicts of human ideas, desires, and wills. He or she recognizes that peace does not require a price, but does not ask others to pay the price before himself. He steps forward and pays the first installment of the price himself and continues to pay until others are constrained to share in the expense by force of example. He estimates, perhaps more accurately, that the militarist, the full long-time price we pay for war, violence, anger, hate, those things which enforce the kind of peace which we now endure. He believes that if we want a better world, we must be ready to pay a bigger price for it than we've had paid hitherto. The true nonviolent resistor pays and as utterly and completely as any soldier with his life and treasure of every sort. Only he is more realistic than the soldier, for he knows that other men beside himself have carried on the ideals of the world and even of his own country, and that they may be trusted to do so even though and probably just because he sacrifices himself for those ideals. True nonviolent resistors are not talkers or theorists. They are men of action, practical politicians, leaders of great causes, defenders of the oppressed, with both feet on the ground and heads in the air. We've gone over modern examples of nonviolent resistance, moral jiu-jitsu, and connected it back. There are other great chapters in here that I'm going to go over in a little bit, titled Utilizing Emotional Energy. I'll get back to that. an effective substitute for war and preparation for nonviolence. And there's another great chapter in here titled Self-Discipline. Listeners, I want to let you know that there's an event coming up next week, next Monday at 4 p.m. I will be live at the Brooklyn Commons, and I'd love for you to join me there. Despite the chorus call and implementation of filtering so-called fake news, as citizen journalists dug into the many levels of what's now termed Pizzagate, disturbing pedophile-related images, artwork, and powerful associations were revealed on a pizza restaurant owner's Instagram account and archived before it was switched to private. That visual data exploded online as a culture of outrage and cyber mobs put Comet Ping Pong in the crosshairs of a child trafficking pedophile network. Well, I might say a potential child trafficking pedophile network. For many, the evidence online was enough to research deeper, but what will it take for an official investigation to commence? Well, on January 2nd, 2017, this is coming up, January 2nd, on the Monday, this Monday coming up at 4 p.m., I'll be with Nick Bryant live at the Brooklyn Commons talking about this. He's the author of the book, The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal. So we're gonna be there live, a two-hour live interview on the stage there at the Brooklyn Commons. You're welcome to be there. Bring your questions. It's probably going to be a little chilly that day, so you'll be served some hot coffee or hot cocoa or tea, whatever you want. And listen to Nick Bryant. He's got about 14 years of experience researching these pedophile networks, how they're covered up, how they're funded. And again, we'll take your questions on this live. And it will be simulcast, as far as I know, at the 4 to 6 p.m. January 2nd, 2017. That's a Monday at 4 p.m. live at the Brooklyn Commons. I will be there live with Nick Bryant, the author of The Franklin Scandal. It's a very difficult topic to get into, but I have to tell you, the surge in citizen journalism is absolutely amazing. What's going on, what they've uncovered, and they're not letting go. They're not letting this go. And the people who are trying to slide this back are some of the mainstream media sources. And we've heard from many mainstream media sources basically saying, don't look over here. Don't dig any further. Nothing to see here. Keep moving along. Jeez, I don't know. It was a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago. The owner of Comet Ping Pong was on, I think it was CNN. I'm not sure if Megyn Kelly is on CNN, but she had James Elefantis on, the owner of Comet Ping Pong. And you can get a transcript of that interview online. So there he was on television in the studio. And Megyn Kelly, in this transcript, this is the Kelly File exclusive. James Elefantis, the owner of Comet Ping Pong in Washington, D.C. James, thank you very much for being here. And he replies, thank you for having me. And she says, Megyn Kelly says, what a terrible ordeal this must have been for you. It has been. She says, when this man walked into your restaurant with his gun firing multiple shots, no one was injured. You weren't there that day, right? I was there earlier that day, he says. Well, you knew things were reaching a fevered pitch, but did you foresee that? And he says, it had been building since before the election, starting on November 4th. I started receiving messages on my Instagram that were just very bizarre and strange and accusing me of all kinds of falseness and conspiracy. And this built and built and built for over a month. And really, it's not just me that was involved. It was my staff who was harassed and attacked. They received Instagram messages, Facebook messages. Then it started to appear that images of children and other people were being taken from social media and blasted throughout the internet with this insane conspiracy idea, with just lies about this impossible international conspiracy of human traffickers involving Hillary Clinton. Megyn Kelly responds, oh my God, and you... You're a Democratic donor. There's nothing illegal about that. Doesn't that doesn't make you a pedophile or somebody who is part of a child sex ring. One of the pictures that Trace showed in the report, people have been saying, look at this, this is evidence. There's a child with her hands taped down, and you're saying there's a simple explanation for that. Very glad you had us on today. It's an incredible thing, and this is Elefantes responding. We've invited your cameras into the restaurant because people have all these ideas. And these are people who use social media. This is a picture of my godchild in a completely innocent place, very happily playing with her sister. Her sister taped her hands. Her parents were there. I put this on my Instagram with their approval. Right there, it sits on the internet for a year and a half, and people start building these lies and falsities about innocent people and then spreading this image over the internet. Megan Kelly responds, when people talk about fake news, you know a lot of folks just roll their eyes. Like, you know, whenever people figured it out, and the truth is, they don't always figure it out, and someone could have been killed inside your restaurant. Elefantes responds, yes. I'm sorry if I missed your calls, listeners. Let me give that number out again. 347-335-0818 if you want a call to participate, and I'll put you on the air if you have a comment or question about what we're talking about. The monitor is blocking the phone, and I just caught it blinking. So, and Elefantes responds, yes. Let me give that number out again, sorry. 347-335-0818. If you have a comment or question about what we're talking about. Megan Kelly responds, for no good reason other than people like Alex Jones fanned a conspiracy theory that even the DC police has no basis in fact. I want to interject in here because Nick Bryant, who will be my guest on Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons, points out that, Jeff, there are no victims coming forward. That's your evidence. You need victims coming forward. He's right about that. There haven't been any victims. Does that mean you should stop investigating something that is kind of suspicious? Elefantes responds, yes, it's a pack of lies, and it's dangerous. What happens is this person was inspired to drive across four state lines with an assault rifle and enter a family-friendly restaurant at 3 in the afternoon on a Sunday. So you can imagine the fear that must have been felt by these people. And this is real consequences. My staff lives in fear. My staff are the bravest people I've ever met. And we're trying to make sure they're safe and do their job. Imagine someone coming to your workplace with an assault rifle. Megan Kelly responds, and to be accused of being a pedophile because you have emails that talk about pizza when you ran a pizza parlor. I mean, they're going to be emailed like the word pizza seems out of place. I mean, it's really gone down the rabbit hole. But you tell me whether this has affected your business and separate, apart from the fact that no one was injured, whether there have been real consequences to you and your customers and your staff as a result of, again, the DC police are saying this is fake, fake. Are you picking up what's going on here, listeners? Elefantes says, thank you. It's true. Yes, it's been just terrorizing. It's been over a month of daily death threats to me, hundreds of phone calls to the restaurant asking for all kinds of wild things like ordering a cheese pizza. No doubt. This is what past guest Dr. Mary Akin called the cyber mob and the outrage culture. And no doubt, Elefantes and Comet Ping Pong is a victim of such an internet phenomena. We're seeing it happen in real time. When I interviewed Dr. Akin, I had no idea that we would be pointing at an example like this. Megan Kelly says, what is the bottom line quickly? What needs to change? Elefantes says, I think there needs to be some way of breaking these things up. It's impossible that this news can go from one person to the next and the next and the grand conspiracy theory, and there's no reporting, no ability to do anything. Megan Kelly, I know Reddit has banned this topic on its website. I mean, slowly but surely. Those who helped ban it are trying to dial it back out of the safety. You know, the concerns for the safety of those who had been in danger. Elefantes says, really? This could happen to anyone. It's not just us. It is any single person. He's right about that. Megan Kelly says, I know, you said to our producers, it's all surreal until the gun comes in. Wow, James, thank you for being here and telling your story. Thanks so much. All right, so that happened. sources online that contribute to investigating this topic. We got a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Yes. Hi. I am so thrilled that you have Dick Bryant on. I have read his book. I work with mothers in custody. It is so common, and people just ignore it. It is just unbelievable. So many, many women lose custody of their children to child molesters and rapists, and Nick Bryant is so brave. I've read the book. I've given it to people to read. I've given it to my students, and nobody seems to. It just seemed like he disappeared. It's really incredible.
It is really incredible. Nick Bryant is quite an amazing guy. Again, 14 years of research. He was on in 2011, 2012, talking about the book. I had him on again because we had the interview with us. He could only do it by cell phone, and it really didn't sound good. We got through it, but luckily he came back live June in 2012 during the middle of Occupy. It was crazy. We were at 120 Wall Street. And I reached out to him on this, and he was hesitant to talk about it. But I said, listen, this is a topic that, for some reason, it got out there. And you can look at Julian Assange and WikiLeaks as a source, you know, through the Podesta emails. And it seems like the people who are running the show don't want all these details coming out because it has brought the topic to millions of people who maybe had no idea that this thing even existed, even if it's not true about Alifantes. But a lot of people say there's something going on there. But even if it's not true, it's bringing awareness to this, mass awareness.
And it's something that people don't want to be aware, and it's just unbelievable with people that have money and a good lawyer, how they just get away with it. I have so many women that you would not believe that have suffered. Can you just imagine, you know, having this happen to your children, getting up in the morning, and how do you function when you know your children are being molested and raped? And the children that, Nick Bryant brought about were children that came to the home supposedly to get, you know, cared for, and then they were just molested. And the one of the women that exposed it was charged with some lying of perjury, and they put her in jail. She was somebody that was molested and exposed it, and it went all the way into the White House, not the White House now, but to senators and Congress people. It's just so corrupt, and so many people that are so just. There's a movie that I show in my class, and it's called Human Trafficking, and it shows this doctor, and he's so respectable, and he calls his wife, "Can I pick up anything you want home?" And he's going on vacation, and he's going to the Philippines, and he's going there to rape little boys. That's his activity. Ooh. With his childhood friends. I mean, there's a lot of sick people in this society. Why would anybody want to rape a little child and think it's fun? I mean, it's just...
what we've learned about this type of behavior, most of the time, the people are in these, you know, addictive modes, and they can't help themselves. They can't stop it. That's why they're a child predator is labeled, and they can't help themselves. And I mean, that's what we hear. There's some wiring in the brain that makes them very different from other people. It's difficult to grasp. I agree.
It's wiring in the brain. A lot of it, and this is an excuse, but it happened to them as children. You know, the cycle is just perpetuated from one generation
right.
to the next. Do you really think it's something in the brain?
Well, that makes them a pedophile in terms of they can't stop. They can't stop themselves. They can't help themselves. So that seems to be some wired up in the brain. Are there external causes or reasons? I'm sure there are, you know, but if you just look at it, it is like a psychopath is similar in a way, and this condition is very similar. So, again, I just want to say that this is January 2nd for Nick Bryant. He'll be...
Yeah, I don't have a computer. I have to go to somebody's house. Is it going to be on the radio, or you have to...
We're going to be we're going to be there live at the Brooklyn Commons, me and Nick sitting there on that stage. He's going to have a microphone. I'm going to be asking him questions. The listeners can ask him questions. That's at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue, on 4 p.m. on January 2nd. It should be really interesting. I'd love to see a lot of the listeners who are concerned about this. And it's also getting it on record that no matter what the mainstream media does to cover it up and backpedal on this topic, there's something here, and millions of people are aware of it, have become aware of it now, even more so. And if you
think so, more so?
It's unbelievable the level of citizen journalism that's going on to investigate this, and they're doing incredible work.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you can just easily go online and just start typing.
Yeah, I don't do that. I miss a lot, but I don't do it online. So is there any way, if you don't go there, that you can hear it on the radio?
Yes.
Or do you have to have a computer?
No, you can hear it on the radio. It'll be simulcast at 4 p.m.
Oh, like live?
Live, yes.
Oh, so I can hear it on the radio. Or
sure
I can go to my girlfriend's house and see it, right, with a computer, but at least if I can hear it.
You know, it's going to be on camera, so there are cameras all over that. So I don't know if they're going to be simulcast cameras that might have it. So that'll be cool, too, so you can see it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try to get there. I live in New Jersey, but that is really wonderful that you're doing that. That's really great.
You know, it's really great for Nick Bryant because this is somebody who wrote this book and had a very difficult time getting it out there to people, and even his family most of his family wouldn't read it. And
really? His family? Oh my gosh.
And think about you know, what you go through and how limiting that is, and the experience of you put all this work and you risk your life.
It's a big fat book. The book is so big.
Yep. You risk your life investigating this and covering this material and exposing how three grand juries suppressed the evidence in that case. The FBI was involved. I mean, we're talking about the Department of Justice. And so that's the idea, is the anatomy of a cover-up, how these things are funded. And then when you connect it back to the mainstream media essentially lobbing softballs at James Olivantes in that interview. That's my opinion on this. There are many questions they could have asked him. This guy on YouTube, I forgot his channel. I only have the URL here. He started writing, here are the questions that Megyn Kelly should have asked, which include, why does James Olivantes call infants retarded whores? Why does his social media friend support this view? Why is his social media avatar a statue of a 13-year-old lover of a Roman emperor? Why are there three of the logos associated with the business complex mentioned in an FBI file as pedophile symbols? Why does Olivantes compulsively upload pictures of sexualized infants? I could keep going here. There's 20 more questions. But he's saying these are the questions that should have been asked in that interview. What do you think about the complicit mainstream media?
Well, I think they're sponsored by big corporations, and they're afraid to do a lot of stuff. But, you know, BAI, we picketed Alex Baldwin for molesting his daughter, and every time we hear him on the radio, they go, this is Alex Baldwin, I listen to BAI, and I get up and I scream, and I sent in an email somebody sent to them, but they ignored it. They still have him.
Are you with a group, ma'am?
I have a shelter for battered women. It's called Strengthen Our Sisters. And
say that name again and tell us where it is.
Strengthen Our Sisters in New Jersey.
Okay.
And they don't like me because I, fight for the people. And we have no money. We haven't been paid in 4 years. And we're suing the county and the state and the Board of Social Services, because they say, I started the first shelter for battered women in my home in 1970.
Wow.
And I've been fighting and battling for years, and the judges don't like me. And, I used to think back in the day, like, if you had a woman judge, it would be fine. But now I don't think that anymore. I wish I could, you know, idealistically, but I don't. And it's just a constant struggle. I've been carried out of court. It's just, like, unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. My friend Donna, now she's on, she's starring in a film, Black is Orange, Orange is Black, that, mm-hmm. you know, and she went through, you would not believe the stuff she went through, and her batter was so charming when he goes to court. They don't believe all the things that he did. We had to speak out, and the daughter told what he did, but they just get away with it, and I think the media definitely covers everything up. They you know, money. It's just really, that's why I love BAI. I have very little money, but I always send BAI a lot of money because it's just so wonderful, that they just expose everything.
Yeah, there's no other station like it. And
oh, no.
I really appreciate your support and strengthen our sisters, listeners.
Yeah.
If you're out in New Jersey, New York,
New Jersey,
send your support to that organization as well. Thank you so much for calling in.
Well, thank you, and keep up the good work. And that's very brave. I'm going to try to get there, but I'm definitely going to listen to it if I do not. Thank you. Many blessed be.
Okay. Good night. So some of those questions. Why are major media outlets reporting about a small pizza place? Why is this pizza place advertising kid-friendliness? Hosting events with people making jokes about pedophilia and transvestites rambling on stage about strangling infants during birth with cables. Why are these bands using the same pedophile imagery from the FBI memo? Why were the traffic cameras turned the other way during the time the supposed gunman walked into Comet Ping Pong? Now, see, that's beautiful. Aikido move there by, this was a false flag scenario to, hey, you know, we have a cyber mob potential. Let's send in our, you know, actor, false flag gunman, and also make sure the traffic cameras are turned the other way. Could that have been the case? What I was told is that this the gunman had an IMDb page, so he had done some acting, and that page was then taken down after this incident. Why does Stephen Colbert tell his audience that the basement is suspected to be under Comet Ping Pong when we already have footage showing it to be at Besta Pizza? Why is this distortion his only argument for dismissal? So Colbert, if you notice, these people are forced to contend, like these late-night talk show hosts are forced to contend with it because there's a cyber mob. There are people. They're not letting it go. And as that caller mentioned, if you're not online, you may not know. You may not have the sense of, you know, all these people that are investigating this. It's quite amazing. Why doesn't Colbert mention that all the properties are owned by the same people? I guess the properties, I guess what this person means in this question, so there's Comet Ping Pong, there's a camping store which has a basement underneath it, and there's another pizza place. So I had no idea they were owned by the same people. Why is there another ping pong establishment in Berlin featuring infants and children on their menu under offers? Why did John Podesta spend time there? Why is the owner of the Berlin ping pong bar an internet security business without online presence with a business partner working in import-export? What are they importing from Thailand? Why is the only information on the product they're selling something you might be looking for? Why are all news outlets simultaneously reporting that this is false, even debunked, without a single one conducting an actual investigation or even providing evidence for this being the case? So that question there, you know, most people listening right now will go, yeah, well, it's obvious. They don't want people knowing this. But who's going to talk about it? And you look at authors like Nick Bryant, who researched this area for 14 years, you think he might know something about this. Again, he points out, Jeff, there aren't victims coming forward, so there really isn't a case. Why are Google... So I'm reading questions that Megyn Kelly should have asked James Elefantis. Why are Google, Facebook, Reddit, and YouTube so concerned with deleting those videos while ignoring pedophile or terrorist content? Why was a pizza place owner, that was actually James Elefantis, why was a pizza place owner listed as the 49th most powerful man in Washington? Why has Tony Podesta naked photographs of neighborhood kids in his bedroom? I don't know about that. I don't know about that. And some of this just gets pretty... Why is Stephen Colbert trying to derail a public outcry for an investigation? That's interesting. I didn't know he was doing that. What is Stephen Colbert's problem with the police investigating this place? Why didn't he mention that his sister had received funds from the accused? Wow. Why did Andrew Breitbart tweet in 2011 that Podesta covers up a child sex slavery discovered during investigation, not before? Why did he have a heart attack shortly after? I didn't know that either. Why does Colbert sound so nervous? Now I'm going to go back and watch Colbert speaking about this. I think that's going to be very interesting. There was so much to talk about, listeners. I'm sorry I didn't get to your phone calls, but I wanted to just hit a couple headlines here. CNN ratings hit all-time record low. Goldman Sachs caught manipulating U.S. dollar. No one arrested. 92 feared dead as Russian plane with military ban crashes en route to Syria. Obama quietly signs the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act into law. You may have heard about that. Climate change expert sentenced to 32 months for fraud says lying was a rush. Only 32 months? London to get manned checkpoints for the first time in 24 years amid MI5 security crackdown. Kissinger, a longtime Putin confidant, sidles up to Trump. NYPD cops raid wrong home, posting photo of handcuffed family to Snapchat. Yeah, that made the news here. I think that person was suspended, if I'm not mistaken. Google changes algorithms of hate. Your right to record the police is at risk. The Goldman Sachs caught manipulating U.S. dollar. That was interesting. The same company that paid Hillary Clinton nearly $700,000 for 3 one-hour speeches has now been ordered to pay a nine-figure sum for currency market manipulation. I wanted to go into Wall Street on Parade reporting on this, but listeners, I just want to remind you, on Monday, January 2nd at 4 p.m. down at the Brooklyn Commons, live at the Brooklyn Commons located at 388 Atlantic Avenue, I will be there with Nick Bryant. We're going to do a live interview. You're welcome to come down if you have questions. If you don't, just come on down, hang out with us, listen to this two-hour live interview. Be a part of it. Connect with Nick Bryant. He needs your support as well because he's putting himself out there, no doubt about that. Well, I'll see you down there January 2nd, 2017 at 4 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.